Welcome to GeekWire. We are on location at the Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. We've got an intimate studio audience here with us. Welcome, everybody. It's great to have you here. I'm Todd Bishop from GeekWire.
And I'm John Cook.
Later on, we are going to be diving into the world of startups and entrepreneurs with two startup founders who have competed and won in the high-stakes GeekWire elevator pitch competition.
High stakes. I like how you're pitching this.
Exactly. So stick around for that coming up. We also wanted to give a sense for where we are. We are in the heart of the Ballard neighborhood here at the Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank. This is our second on-location podcast here. We're going to be having another one coming up later in October. And it's great, a really sort of a thriving spot. It is not your typical bank here in this location.
No, there's wine and beer, first off.
That's right, absolutely. And there's actually even a fundraiser that they're doing right now
for the
American Heart Association, where they're actually allowing folks to buy balloons that have prizes inside them. And John, you have one right there.
I think we should do it, right?
Oh, okay. Wow, all that's right. Going to come across great on air.
Let's see how that goes.
Okay, so let's see. John just popped the balloon.
I popped it so vigorously that I
there's
think
nothing
I lost
it.
The... Oh, no, oh, there it is. Was.
Okay.
Let's see what I won.
All right.
Now,
so,
I bought two. I won an Echo Dot earlier.
Yes,
so
you did.
Let's see
so,
if this is going to come through.
So while you're doing that, I should say we're going to be talking about some interesting news this week, including a little bit about the iPhone news and the Apple Watch news that came out. Plus, yes?
Tumblr.
You got a Tumblr.
I got a Tumblr.
Okay.
Everyone wants a Tumblr, right? An Echo Dot and a Tumblr. I'm cleaning up here at the Neighbor Hub.
Yep. So, John, what have you been up to lately? How are things been going?
Oh, boy. I'm barely staying above water, Todd.
Really?
Yeah. It's as we've talked about. No, seriously, this is the busiest time in GeekWire's history since we started GeekWire 8 years ago. I mean, we have a number of projects going. The elevator pitch, which we're going to talk about later, is a big all-consuming project, which has been super fun for us to do, a video project, which culminates at our GeekWire Summit on October 2nd and 3rd, which is our biggest conference of the year. And we're going to have our finals of the elevator pitch at that event, amongst a lot of other things that we're really excited about. So I'm spending a lot of my time these days doing the planning and organization of the event, including much of the great content that hopefully everybody out there in our podcast land is going to get to tune into and see.
That's right. It's coming up October 1st through 3rd. You can check it out at geekwire.com/summit. But while you've been doing all that, you know, all I've been doing really is playing video games.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that sounds fun. Tell me more.
So I get to interview at the summit the president of Nintendo of America, Reggie Fils-Aimé.
You've been practicing his name,
I can
tell.
I've been practicing his last name, yes. And so I made a point. I'd played the Nintendo Switch before, but I had never actually gone out and purchased one for my home. So I have a Nintendo Switch in my basement now that I've been playing a lot. Super Mario Odyssey is by far my favorite game. And they are going to be coming out. The news of this past week is that the Switch Online service is finally going to be debuting on September 18th. So I'm really excited about that. It's going to be fascinating to see if Nintendo can compete with Xbox Live and PlayStation Network and really become more of a force in online gaming. So that's something that's going to be...
So what's your favorite game on the Switch?
Oh, by far, so far, Super Mario Odyssey.
Are you doing the Switch? Are you taking it out, portable, and playing as you go?
Yeah, absolutely. As many folks know, the key selling point of the Switch is that you can take the tablet out of the dock and take it with you. And my daughter loves that, to play Minecraft on location, as it were. So
after playing the Switch, what is the one question that you're excited to ask Reggie?
To me, the fascinating story of Nintendo over the past 4 years was that many people were counting them out. And if you look at the flop of the Wii U after the success of the Wii, I think a lot of people thought Nintendo had lost its mojo. And to me, the fascinating part is that they held on and they kept their culture intact. They kept most of their people around. And Reggie was the person who led that. So one of the most interesting things that I want to talk to him about is how he's done that as a leader here in the North American market. And of course, Nintendo is based in Japan, but he really is the public face here in North America. So I think that's going to be fascinating to find out. All right. So, John, I know you got a chance this morning to catch a little bit of the iPhone unveiling.
Yeah, like 3 minutes. I came in, I was like, oh gosh, I'm going to actually try to watch a little bit of this, but I got pulled into other things. The only thing I saw when I was in there was a new functionality with portrait mode on your camera.
Yes, that's right. So the new...
Which I do like portrait mode. I actually use that quite a bit.
So you're on the iPhone 8 Plus?
Yes.
Is that right? How many iPhone users versus Android users in the audience? We got some iPhone, some Android?
It's mostly iPhone. Mostly iPhone. Like, yeah.
Okay. How many folks use the portrait mode regularly? Okay. Yeah, quite a few people in the audience. And so the new feature essentially allows you to manually adjust the f-stop after you take the picture. And so what that means is... when you've got a background that's blurred, like in a lot of professional photography, you can, after the fact, after you take it, adjust the blur to...
Yeah, and I was watching that, and the crowd goes wild. Like, it's so odd. Like, the greatest thing has ever happened, you know? It's like,
well,
come
it's
on,
not,
all right.
Not,
I get a slightly better photo. Who cares?
I do. Behind the scenes, I do poke a little bit of fun at Tim Cook, the Apple CEO, because he is just... so clearly just practiced at his enthusiasm. And he even holds his hand in the Steve Jobs prayer mode. You know, it's just like, clearly this is somebody who has practiced that level of emotion to get across to the crowd. And it comes across a little bit disingenuous at times, but clearly they are doing some interesting things with the next iPhone wave.
Yeah, so there must be something better than just the portrait mode that's coming out with the new iPhone and the new operating system.
Yeah, so...
so what's the killer thing that people need to know with the new device?
So the augmented reality features on the new iPhones enabled by iOS 12 are off the charts. One of the most interesting things that I saw in the announcement was a new... functionality in an app called Home Court that allows you to set your phone up and watch you shooting baskets. And it basically tracks everywhere you go. It's almost like one of those NBA on the broadcast.
The shot tracker, yeah.
Exactly. And it tells you, okay, you made 7 out of 10. You were this percentage from this part of the floor and this. And we're finally seeing AR, augmented reality, come into the mainstream through the phone, which I think is interesting because... a lot of folks would have said, no, it's going to come through Microsoft HoloLens or it's going to come through the Magic Leap, like a headset that you wear. But I think really where it's becoming much, much more mainstream initially is through the phone.
Well, I know we're going to get into the elevator pitch with Cassie and Kwame later. One of our participants actually was in this space in a recent episode where we had a lot of AR and VR companies, and they have an app. It's Dance Reality that allows you to project onto the floor the potential dance steps that you want to do, if you want to do the salsa, and it will project that, and then you follow along while you hold your device and do the correct dance steps and learn how to dance.
This is like for you at the GeekWire Gala.
Now, I'm a little... sorry, folks, my iPhone went off.
That was Siri.
That was Siri, hey. It was, you know, I'm a little more freeform in my dance style, Todd, as you like. I don't like anyone telling me what to do, especially an app.
Okay, all right, so no AR for you.
Nope.
I will say, and I've talked a little bit about this, but my favorite new app on iOS 12, and the cool thing about iOS 12 is if you have an iPhone now, a modern iPhone, you're going to be able to get iOS 12, whether or not you upgrade to a new iPhone. And one of the new apps is called Measure. And it's actually a way to physically measure the world around you. So I've been using it. The problem is it's not yet accurate, at least in the test version. And so
when you're doing construction around the house, you might, you know.
Yeah. I've tried to measure couches that I'm putting on Craigslist and stuff, and I'm realizing it's like a foot off. And so they've got a little bit of work to do before they release iOS 12 to the public. So,
yeah.
Big announcements today. The new Apple Watch Series 4 comes with ECG, electrocardiogram.
Are people buying Apple Watches?
Yeah, some people.
Are they?
Yeah.
I just I don't get it.
Yeah. Well,
I don't get the... I'm not a big watch person, never have been, but yeah.
So,
yeah.
But it is interesting to see how Apple is just continuing to push things forward. So we have a full discussion, by the way, with an expert, Andrew Edwards.
Somebody who really knows this stuff.
On our Geared Up podcast this week. So with that, let's wrap the news segment, and we're going to be right back around the corner talking about how to pitch your startup with two experts in that topic. You're listening to GeekWire. We are coming to you on location this week from the Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood, and we will be right back on GeekWire. Welcome back to GeekWire. I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
We are coming to you on location this week at the Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. On this segment, elevator pitch. It is the classic exercise that any startup entrepreneur has to do. And we have two of the best in Seattle at this, at least judging from our GeekWire elevator pitch competition. I'd like to welcome to the show Kwame Bowler. He is the CEO and co-founder of New, the vacation rental cleaning startup. It's great to have you here, Kwame.
Well, more than happy to be here. Thank you guys so much for the invitation. So let's have fun.
That's right. So we're going to get to your pitch in just a second. I'd also like to welcome Cassie Wallander, the co-founder and chief product officer at Invio.
Hello.
It's great to have you here. That is an enterprise software startup that helps speed up clinical trials at biotech and pharmaceutical companies. So two startups in totally different sectors here. Mm-hmm. One involved in the Airbnb and sharing economy, really riding that wave, and another really riding the wave of all of the fascinating biotech innovations that we're seeing come to market. Mm-hmm. So, John.
And two winners, too, yes, of the elevator pitch.
So for people out there who are listening who have not seen it, what is the elevator pitch competition?
It is a new show from GeekWire, but not really new if you think about it, because we actually did this right when we started GeekWire. We came up with this concept about startups pitching their ideas in an elevator, and what better elevator than the Space Needle here in Seattle. So several years ago, we came up with this idea. We launched the series, and it kind of fizzled out because we just had a lot of other things going on with GeekWire, but this year we brought it back in force, and we're going to have 9 episodes throughout the course of 2018. It culminates at the GeekWire Summit on October 2nd when Cassie and Kwame and 6 other finalists who have won their episodes are going to appear live on stage and give their 42-second pitch. Now we've had a little discussion and debate there because we started the elevator pitch at the Space Needle for the first half of the series, mm-hmm. and they have a 42-second elevator to get to the top of the Space Needle. For the second half of the series, we moved to the iconic Smith Tower in Pioneer Square, and they have a 48-second elevator. So we already have a little controversy here between Kwame and Cassie on whether 42-second or 48-second is the best. But overall, it's a really fun show. It's a great way to spotlight entrepreneurship, the importance of really being able to hone your pitch and tell your story in a very coherent and clear manner, in part to win investment dollars or customers or employees. And so the idea of being inside an elevator and pitching your company is pretty fun. And we'll hopefully to hear from Kwame and Cassie about whether they thought it was fun. I think it was a little nerve-wracking for both of you. How was it being on the show and pitching your startup in an elevator?
I have a new fear of elevators.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry that we brought that on to you. Yes.
I had fun with it. I thought it was an interesting challenge, a great way to put a unique spin on something that every one of us as a CEO or even just as a co-founder needs to be prepared to do at any moment's notice. So it was a blast for me, nerve-wrecking prior to doing it. Mm-hmm. After I was done, I was like, oh, man, this is awesome.
Well, Kwame, one thing that you told me at the show, and you were actually on the first episode, mm-hmm. You went to the Space Needle like a few days before and practiced in the Space Needle elevator, and you were thinking that you were going to be projecting out towards the windows, and so you were using landmarks in the city as you were passing for your timing.
Yep.
But then we threw a little bit of a curveball when you arrived and said, no, you're going to face the camera, which faces internal. How did that throw off your pitch?
Well, first time around, because we actually had the opportunity of shooting twice. But I think I nailed it on the first one. I think you guys used most of the footage from the first one, actually. It was just kind of using kind of like different vibration patterns to get a better idea of where I was. But it threw me off a little bit because I had an idea of how long it was just based off of the placement. And I had a strong feeling of the 42. So it wasn't like I was actually timing it with a stopwatch. I actually used the elevator as the best way to gauge. And I knew also, like, once I got to, like, around 38 seconds, it starts slowing down. So that was also something that helped out a lot.
So a good startup lesson here. Go in prepared.
Absolutely. Yes. That is just off the charts. I never would have imagined anybody would have gone in advance and done that level of practice.
Well, the funny thing you told me is like the elevator, I mean, it was open to the public and the elevator is crowded. So there's Kwame on the elevator, you know, and like, who's this crazy person like talking to himself, you know, about cleaning a cleaning service, you know, for Airbnb?
Oh, yeah. So I actually did it twice. First time I did it, I wasn't welcome with as warm of a reception. It was early in the morning. It had a lot more people present. It was also on a weekend, so there was a lot more people that were visiting, that were going on the needle. So after like the first time, they're like, okay, what is this kid doing? Let's get him out of here. But the second...
Call security.
So they did kick you out.
They didn't kick me out per se. They just basically said stop or else. The second time, though, I was very fortunate. I actually got featured on a KCTS 9 segment for Pitch Black, which was something I competed in last year as well. And the woman that was operating the elevator recognized me.
No way. Whoa. Oh, that's cool.
And so she was like, oh, I know your company. I know what you do. And I was like, all right, cool. So this is what I need to do. And I also went really late at night. Like, actually, I purposely went 20 minutes to closing just to make sure that most people wouldn't be spending $25 to go up and spend time
and hear about a cleaning service. Yes.
Yeah. So she was very kind. I got to do it about six, maybe seven times, and I did it the night before, which was on a Friday night. So it worked out.
Wow, that is dedication, and you won the episode, so it paid off.
Yeah, it did. So, I recommend it to a couple of other people that competed, and then let me know that they were doing it. That's the easiest way to get it done. I made sure not to ask John. I actually told him that I didn't ask him intentionally.
Ask for forgiveness, another good entrepreneurial trait there.
Not permission, yes. Exactly. Yeah. So, Cassie, you got to do your pitch at the Smith Tower, which is another iconic Seattle structure, another iconic Seattle elevator. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like for you?
Well, I was very excited and fortunate to have just accidentally, by good luck, bumped into John, and he was like, what do you do? And
I gave
him a pitch.
Yeah, we sat together at an event at the Riveter, actually.
Yes, yeah, for Female Founders Alliance.
I think you were there, too.
I was there.
Yeah, we met there, too.
Yeah, that's where we met, and I was like, gosh, this sounds interesting. You'd be perfect for the elevator pitch.
The night before that event, I had met your co-founder at Seattle Startup Drinks, and then he introduced us, so it was just kismet.
Small town Seattle.
And, but for me, the day of, I woke up sick. And so that was why I now have a fear of elevators, is I had my pitch down. I was super excited. I had it memorized. I did the flashcards thing. I got in the elevator and realized my right ear was entirely plugged from sinusitis, and I was in incredible pain the entire time.
Oh, no.
It was pretty bad.
This is another startup lesson.
Persevere.
Persevere. Yeah.
So if you watch the video, you can see a lot of pain in my eyes. And I am pained by the inefficiencies of clinical trials operations, but it's not usually physical pain.
What did you both learn about the importance of honing your message and what to focus on in a very tight, condensed talk like that or pitch?
42 seconds is a really short amount of time. So, like, the first time you start pitching, you'll say everything that I want to say that I think is important to my company, and you'll time it, and you're like, oh, I'm at 2 minutes and 47 seconds.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, so what can I chop? And then you talk to other people, and you talk to your founders and your co-founders and see what they think. And then all of a sudden, all right, good. Now I'm at a minute and 15. And then it's figuring out how to just get it quicker, concise, and what's really important. What do you have to say to get people to ask you the right questions to want to learn more about your company?
If I could add to that, my background's in user experience design. And so I think about it as a UX problem. You're trying to hide a lot of complexity behind the simplest presentation possible. And so that's really what I went for, especially in an area we're addressing. It's very complex. There's a lot of regulatory involvement. So how do you, similar to what Kwame was just saying, you don't have to get them to a place where they're ready to invest or buy your product. You have to get them to a place where they're intrigued enough to have the next conversation. And that's the goal of any elevator pitch or 5-minute pitch or 7-minute pitch, is just to get that hook in to get to the next conversation.
Yeah, I just want to change gears here just for a bit, because I think you both have really interesting backgrounds on how you got to be be entrepreneurs in the first place. Mm-hmm. Cassie, you came out of academia and then were working for MySpace of all companies, and I want to talk to you about that. And Kwame, you were an engineer at Boeing before you came up with this idea for, you know, a cleaning service that attaches into the Airbnb ecosystem. So both mm-hmm. of you, I'd just love to hear more of how you made that leap and why you made that leap. And if you regret it.
No, definitely don't regret it.
No regrets.
I think it's kind of funny. I'm going to be able to meet Dennis Muhlenberg at the summit, and I would have never had that opportunity.
You're going to be on the same stage. Yeah, that's
right. As an employee.
Yeah, the Boeing CEO.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting, to say the least. But my journey started quite simply. Me and a couple of friends found out about vacation rentals, got to a point where we're scaling our own small company, got to a point where we're making about $250,000 annually. And we could grow, but the thing that inhibited us time and time again wasn't inventory. It wasn't difficult to get the apartments. It was difficult to find the cleaners. We churned through four different cleaners in 1 year and then thought, you know, what better way to solve it than solve it ourselves?
So were you moonlighting at Boeing when you got the project going with your friends?
Yep.
And then what was the process like when you decided that, hey, it's time to quit the Boeing job and make the full leap?
Well, there was a couple things happening. First and foremost, I was getting married to my lovely wife over there. And I would never wish a wedding on a startup founder. But so that was definitely taking up quite a bit of my time, and I needed to prioritize. Another thing is that New was hitting an inflection point. We were at the point to where like all the founders just felt like behind the desk, we were hurting ourselves because we were just lying going to work every day that we were going there.
Yeah. You hear this from entrepreneurs, and some of the advice that I've heard from venture capitalists over the years is you got to make that decision to quit your job. I mean, if you are really in it, you have to make that cut in order to really focus and to show that you're fully committed. So I know a number of venture capitalists that won't even invest in companies until that entrepreneur has made that decision and that commitment.
It's one of the first questions on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Have you left your job?
Is this a full-time gig for you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Shark Tank is the gold standard.
I do love Shark Tank.
It is the question we got right off the bat and knew we had to go all in 100% before we started fundraising. But I tell you what, it's a position of privilege to be able to go all in 100%. And it's something I think we don't talk about a lot in the startup community is how much privilege it takes to be able to say, you know, I'm quitting my day job.
And Cassie, you have an interesting path into the startup world initially. You got hired at a company called iLike, which eventually was sold to MySpace. And a person who is pretty well known in the Seattle tech community and global tech community for that matter, Code.org founder Hadi Partovi.
Yes. Yeah.
Got you into this whole racket of startups. So tell that story. Hadi's a very well known angel investor.
Hadi's amazing. And he kind of dragged me kicking and screaming into startup land. I was working at Seattle Pacific University on staff there. I'm a loyal person who sticks to things when I like them. So I was there for like 6 years, first job out of college. In their computer information systems department. And he reached out to me on LinkedIn. So I'm the poster child for, yes, you can find jobs on LinkedIn.
Yeah. And the poster child for social networking. Yes. Just not the MySpace social networking.
Yeah, so he convinced me to quit my job. I met him the next day for coffee, just thinking I could help him find someone. I wasn't really looking. But I was 23, and he convinced me, you know, like, this guy's inspiring. What he's doing is inspiring. If I'm not going to do a startup now, when in my life am I going to be younger and more ready to pour energy into this? Because it really takes a heck of a lot of energy, more so than I even realized at the time. And I'm so glad he did, because now I'm completely addicted to working in startups.
Well, as I like to say, after you've worked at enough startups and you've been part of that process, you become unemployable by larger companies. So
how did you come to co-found the company you're with now, Envio?
Well, this is actually my third startup now, but first time founding. And after the second acquisition, I was at IMS Health post the acquisition of Aperture. And I found you can take the girl out of the startup, but you can't take the startup out of the girl. I was working really hard, very determined to put my full effort into anything I worked on. And I sort of came to realize if I'm going to be working this hard, I should be working on something that I have some equity stake in a serious way and that I'm really, really passionate about. And so I started looking for the next big problem. And I had already fallen in love with SaaS, with life science SaaS specifically, because we can use technology to actually impact people's healthcare outcomes and the quality of their lives and sometimes the length of their lives. And that's amazing. Like, I could go build the next Instagram for cats or whatever, but who cares? Like, I want a reason to get up out of bed on Monday morning and be like, let's do this and make people's lives better. So I'm passionate about great usability and specifically for life science SaaS. So I was looking for a problem in that arena thanks to the experience I had at Aperture. And that's when I started talking to my now co-founder about this problem in the clinical trial space, where there's a huge inefficiency that slows down the development of treatments and medicines for all of us and causes clinical trials to be so gosh darn expensive that it's cost prohibitive, meaning a lot of times if you're in a small patient population or if you have an acute condition, it's just not a profitable outcome for someone to throw billions at a trial.
So I would ask you how you're going to solve that problem, but we have a mechanism for that. And we're going to do that. We're going to have you both do your elevator pitches to explain your companies after the break. You're listening to GeekWire. We are coming to you on location from the Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. And we will be right back after a break. Welcome back to GeekWire. I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
We are on location this week at the Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. If you haven't been down here, be sure to come down and check it out. It's not your ordinary bank here in Seattle. So our topic this week is startups and entrepreneurs. And we have two guests with us who each won their respective episodes of Elevator Pitch, GeekWire's startup pitching series, video series. We're joined by Kwame Bowler, the CEO and co-founder at New, the vacation rental cleaning startup, and Cassie Wallander, the co-founder and chief product officer at Invio, an enterprise software startup that helps speed up clinical trials at biotech and pharmaceutical companies. And now is the moment where we are going to have them make their elevator pitches.
And it's good for them to practice, because we should tell the audience that the elevator pitch series is not over. No. We have nine episodes with three startups each, and the finalists from each episode will be going to the GeekWire Summit and pitching in the finals on October 2nd, live on stage. And Kwame and Cassie are two of our finalists who will be there.
So who wants to go first?
Could I, please?
Yeah, okay.
Wait a minute. Should we at least flip the coin? That was a power move.
All right, all Cassie. I've got my time. I've got my alarm going here. So now the elevator at the Smith Tower where you did your pitch was 48 seconds. So
we'll
give you 48 seconds.
Okay.
Ready, set, go.
Okay. Clinical trials are critical to bring new medicines to patients. However, the necessary data quality requirements are manual and labor intensive. This causes delays, errors, and wastes $13 billion. Invio, gosh, this is harder than the elevator.
Keep going. You got it. You got this.
You got it.
Okay. Invio helps research organizations to do remote monitoring and use AI to automate common workflows. We cut 15% off timelines and up to half of data monitoring costs. And we're already in use at top-tier institutions like Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. This is a $5.6 billion revenue opportunity for Invio, and a chance to help improve healthcare options for all.
Perfect timing. So there's my iPhone alarm.
That's good. Yeah.
Okay. So, John, do you have any questions about the pitch?
Should we hear Kwame's? Okay. And then we'll. That's kind of how our judges do it on the show. So everyone pitches, and then they.
That's true.
Let's do that.
That's true.
Yeah. Kwame, do you want 42 seconds? I feel like I'm like asking people on.
You can
American
give me
Ninja
the extra
Warrior.
Six. I can take it.
Okay, all right.
I won't fight.
Here's your 48 seconds. Ready, set, go.
Picture this: you're an Airbnb host from Seattle with a second home downtown. Well, it's 11 o'clock and your guests just checked out. And just like a hotel, you're going to have to make sure that the linens are replaced, the apartment's clean, the toiletries restocked. A a little difficult to do if you happen to work a day job or vacation regularly, and that's where Nu steps in. So Nu is a tech-enabled home service that connects Airbnb hosts with local cleaners to facilitate hotel-grade turnovers. To date, we've been in over 80 homes, we've done over 2,500 turnovers, we partnered with over 15 companies, all in effort of conquering this $10 billion problem. We're able to do so through use of tech and ops to route a cleaner to their doorsteps right after the guest checks out and before the next guest checks in. The world's largest hotel chain lacks a cleaning solution to match its growth, at least until now.
Boom. Nailed it. Now, That was great. Let's hear it for Kwame. Kwame. Now, I'm sitting here watching your wife in the audience laughing about this because I can only imagine that she's heard this about 3,000 times at this point. Am I right?
No. If you honestly ask her. When we were driving up, she was like, baby, please take this seriously. Please. Like, you should be talking and practicing. And I'm like,
doing it
with funny accents and like trying to like not freak out about the fact that I'm like, when was the last time that I actually had a chance to work on this? And
was it the day of the elevator pitch?
No, it wasn't that bad. Or it wasn't that long. I've actually been fortunate enough to be in other competitions. So like part of my pitch is incorporated in my deck. So It's just cycling through certain aspects of it and then cutting all this spots out. But like even now I'm like replaying it in my mind. I'm like, oh, I should have said this. I shouldn't have said that. But
One thing I really appreciated about both of those pitches was you could hear in them the classic anatomy of an elevator pitch.
Problem, solution, market size.
Yes.
Team YS.
Yeah.
Why
not? That's right.
Exactly.
Customers, new customers.
Traction. Yep. Yep.
So to me, it's very clear what Nu does. I mean, I get that, but I am not immersed in the world of biotech. I understand clinical trials and I understand they're very important for FDA approval.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how you help whoever you help do whatever you want them to do?
So basically, when you're running a clinical trial, it's not usually at one hospital, especially in phase two and phase three. It's at many different hospitals. My co-founder, the last one he ran was at 40 hospitals, and he was really, really frustrated because the hospitals would send them all this data about each patient visit during the course of the trial, which was years long. But the FDA required that data that they received was double-checked against the original source. So the people at the hospital were transcribing it into an online system, but then someone from Dima's team had to fly on site to the hospital every 4 to 8 weeks and review that data they received against the original source. Sometimes it was originating on paper, but sometimes it was coming from an electronic health record. So even when it was starting out digital, they would print it out and put it in a 3-ring binder and then hand it to this monitor when they came on site. So as you can imagine, that really pushes the costs and delays and opportunities for human error up in a clinical trial. And clinical trials are just a data science, garbage in, garbage out. So that data quality is essential for all of our safety.
And you alluded in your pitch to the traction that you've already gotten. So there are pharmaceutical companies or people or companies that work with pharmaceutical companies that are already using your service?
Both. Yes. Yeah. So we only have a handful of customers now just kind of starting commercialization, but we've already had great success. Namely with Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, which is a well-regarded research institution that does over 500 clinical trials a year. So we had fantastic results showing 14x ROI by using our product there on their clinical trials. And good examples of how it can make things more efficient using automation is if you're redacting a patient's medical record to share with the trial sponsor, do you, in the old world, get out your Sharpie and print 100 pages of one patient's medical records? Because in oncology, you could have a very thick stack of medical records for one patient and just sit in a room and do the old redaction dance for hours. Or do you say, hey, Envio, use some AI to suggest all the fields that need to be redacted, and then share that version automatically with the monitor, taking it down to minutes.
So I think I learned a new word in your pitch, or at least a new acronym, which you pitch, you largely sell to, which was a CRO.
CRO, yes.
CRO, which is a contract.
Contract research organization. Yeah.
And that's your main customer
base.
That's
our main customer.
And so that's a group that does kind of, they offshoot the clinical trial. The pharmaceutical companies do kind of a outsourcing of the clinical trials to these groups.
70% of clinical trials about are outsourced. They outsource their clinical operations to CROs to run the clinical operations because they're the ones with the expertise in, okay, let's sign up these hospitals because they're going to have this patient population, and they run the whole study and monitor the data.
And the judges on the elevator pitch during your episode, they loved this concept because they loved that you had a very tightly defined market that you could go after, and you were really making great penetration in getting into those CROs. And that was one thing that kept coming up through episodes of the elevator pitch that I noticed as I listened to the judges and what they were saying.
CROs?
Not CROs. I'm going to make a point here. It was this idea that the best entrepreneurial businesses were really, really tightly focused on one customer segment and market. And that kept coming up over and over again. If you were too broad and dispersed, they didn't really like that so much.
Yeah,
if you had
focus.
Something you could nail and had real tight focus, they really enjoyed those products. I know, Kwame, that was the case with you. I mean, obviously, you had a very much component of your service, providing cleaning services into the Airbnb ecosystem. They love that highly tight focus. Now, the thing that popped up on your show that I thought was fascinating was one of the questions from Heather Redman of Flying Fish Venture Partners, one of our judges on the elevator pitch. And she came up, which was a natural question that I had when I listened to your pitch, is why in the heck doesn't Airbnb just do this as an add-on service themselves? What's stopping Airbnb from doing this? And I know the judges loved your response. Mm-hmm. And tell us what that was.
So there's a lot of reasons why Airbnb isn't entering this market. First and foremost, the cleaning problem is a huge problem to solve. It's an incredibly difficult problem. Most people considerably underestimate how difficult and technical cleaning is as a whole. So there's a lot of barriers to entry, especially when impacting a company that's well over $42 billion in value in terms of its brand and recognition. They're not going to want to enter something that's really complicated to solve and do a bad job. Mm-hmm. But there are other things as well. Like, they've been skirting on the hotel classification for some time.
Oh. That was the thing that I think really resonated when the judges heard that. They and I thought that was an interesting part of the show because they're like, oh, this guy gets this market. You know, there's something here, because I think that was the natural question. But they can't be a cleaning service because it starts to get them into the classification of a hotel.
Yep.
And they just want to kind of sit outside of that and be a marketplace so they can presumably make way more money.
And precedent has also shown that every time that there's been a giant that's kind of emerged to try to solve this problem, they're quick to partner with them. And so that's what our goal is. Our goal is simply to get large enough. They're already aware of us. Like, I know that they're aware of us, at least at this stage. So it's just a matter of time. And we're confident that our solution is the one that's best, as also the one that's most scalable in comparison to our competition, just based off of our differentiators and what makes us unique. Mm-hmm. So it's just really a matter of time.
So are you employing cleaners, or are you connecting cleaners with Airbnb hosts?
So actually, Nu's a marketplace. We act as an intermediary between hosts and cleaner contractors. The secret sauce that keeps them tied to Nu is the linens and the supplies that we provide. So what's unique about Nu is that we provide prepackaged backpacks that contain linens like your fitted sheets, flat sheets, towels, and supplies in the end, all catered specifically to the apartment, along with instruction sets explaining what the host wants done with each service, so that the cleaners can just pick up the backpacks, clean the unit, and then pick up the dirty and put out the clean. Them doing that voids the laundry problem because it takes much longer to wash and dry sheets than it does to clean an apartment. And so with Nu, they can do 2 to 3 times the amount of jobs that they would be able to without us. So although they're taking about a 35% cut in comparison to market rates, because they can do 2 to 3 jobs in the same time, they earn more. Then hosts are happy to pay 15% above market rates for the service because of the peace of mind that we provide.
And one of those hosts
after the elevator pitch, actually.
Is you?
Aired. Not me. I don't have my own Airbnb, but my brother does. He's got a houseboat in Seattle, and he heard about New on the elevator pitch, and they love it. They're using it for their houseboat.
Do you think you'll eventually expand beyond Airbnb?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, the game plan has never been to just be the Airbnb cleaning guys. It just kind of always started with, hey, you know, Amazon started killing books. Mm-hmm. Why don't we start with taking out Airbnb cleans? We had strong domain expertise. We were unique in the sense to where we ran both a cleaning company as well as ran Airbnb. So we understood the pain points on both sides of the markets well. What's unique about Airbnb cleans is that they're highly recursive. They're going to be done at least 2 to 3 times per property, per week, averaging closer to 6 times per month. So that means that, you know, each host from our stake, we're getting around $250 per month. That's really stable, really very consistent. It's a good way to figure out a lot of the kinks and idiosyncrasies that comes with the industry as a whole.
Well, this is great. So for each of you, can you tell folks where to find out more about your companies?
Check us out on New Clean, spelled N as in Nancy, E as in elephant, U as in umbrella, the word cleans.com.
Got it. Cassie?
And we are invioinc.com, INVIOINC.com.
And before we sign off, as I said, you guys are both competing at the GeekWire Summit in the finals of the elevator pitch. So before we sign off, what is the advice you're going to give to one another? to really win. Oh. Cassie, I want you to give Kwame some advice.
I think yours is pretty brilliant already, to be honest. I love what you guys are doing. Maybe slow down a little.
Okay.
But you only had 42 seconds, so.
Sorry, when you got the timer going, it's a little.
I would say my best advice is don't get sinusitis the morning of.
Yes. I don't know. I think I really liked your pitch. I think it covered a lot of really interesting points. I believe you did cover a large array of your business. The one advice that I would give you is think of the problem you're solving. Work backwards from there. Like, don't necessarily talk about the core business. Try to sneak some metrics in it, but really address the problem. Because if you paint the problem in everyone's mind, then they'll start questioning about you, your solution.
That's great.
Start with the pain.
Well, Kwame Bowler is the CEO and co-founder at New, the vacation rental cleaning startup, and Cassie Wallander is the co-founder and chief product officer at Invio, which is an enterprise software startup that speeds up clinical trials at biotech and pharmaceutical companies. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Well, thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a big thanks to our audience here at the Neighbor Hub at Columbia Bank in Seattle's Ballard neighborhood. Give yourselves a big round of applause for being here. That is it for the GeekWire podcast this week. If you like our podcast, be sure to check out more at geekwire.com/podcast. You can also find the show on iTunes or wherever you listen. Claire McGrain produces the show. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
And I'm John Cook.
Thanks for listening to GeekWire.